Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, July the 2nd, the first Monday of the month, when my boss, Phil Corvo, typically joins us to hear your gripes and praise about Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, good news, Phil is on vacation, so his monthly appearance is postponed until next week. Just kidding, Phil, in case he listens to this online. Phil Corvo will join us next Monday during this hour. This Monday, during this week when we celebrate the 4th of July, we will talk with a guest who has learned it is difficult to buy a flag to celebrate the 4th of July that isn't made in China. That it's difficult to buy a lot of things that aren't made in China, from toys to shoes to gadgets to mousetraps even. She came to the realization that almost everything in her home, especially the children's toys following one Christmas morning a couple of years ago, were made in China. So she and her family decided to see if they could stop buying anything made in China for an entire year. This is something that could be on your mind right now with all the problems with Chinese imports that are in the news these days, from tires to pet food to lead-tainted toys, now fish. Maybe it's your concern over American manufacturing jobs leaving the country. Maybe it's your concern over the human rights issues that you've heard about with overseas manufacturing. Whatever the reason, can you manage, can you live without buying something made in China? Have you ever tried? And would you want to? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will talk with our guest about her experience and whether her boycott of sorts was successful or not, and we will welcome your questions for her. Sarah Bongiorni is author of A Year Without Made in China. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
And alert listeners might remember that we talked with you about this. You wrote an essay that was in the Christian Science Monitor a couple of years ago, and now that essay's turned into a book.
That's right. It was really interesting because, you know, going through this whole year, that it was the 2005 calendar year, you know, we were doing this on our own, and it just as a way to, it wasn't a political protest, it was a way to understand in a very personal way my own family's connections to the Chinese economy. But as you go through, you don't know that this is something that might be of interest to other people. So, you know, kind of working in a void. And then I wrote that Christian Science Monitor essay, and that created just this, you know, lots of interest in your interview and appearance on your show. And it was really interesting to me because I realized that something that was on my mind, turns out it was on a lot of other people's minds as well. Oh. And that was interesting to me.
Absolutely. I know we got a lot of reaction to that program for people for one reason or another were troubled by all the items that are made in China. Mm-hmm. You must have been inundated by reaction. And in fact, I read that you were interviewed by Chinese media over
this.
Yes.
I got to be very, very, lots of phone calls and emails and so forth from the Chinese media. And in fact, they sent a news crew to our home from Washington, D.C. And it was very interesting because, like I said, I had no idea what kind of reaction, if any, would be out there to this essay and our experience. But it what was very interesting to me was how it sort of crossed the line from American people to the essay that I wrote ran everywhere from Israel to Canada to Taiwan, and then the Chinese media picked on it as well. And the other thing that's so interesting to me personally was that lots of people, as I went through the year itself and then afterwards as well, people offer different reasons that they might had thought about or even tried to avoid Chinese products. And so lots of times I would just listen to what they had to say as far as what their concerns were. But in our case, it was really to see if it could be done in this day and age. And sort of, you know, the global economy is this sort of fuzzy concept out there that seems like it doesn't have that much to do with us directly. But this was a way to look in a very personal way about how every day we are so closely connected to the global economy. In our ordinary consumer decisions, from the time we get up to the time we go to bed, and specifically to China.
Yeah, and the verdict was that it could be done, but it sure wasn't easy, was it?
Well, it could. It's like, you know, there's a part of the book where a friend was actually a former boss of mine was saying, you know, you're not avoiding China, you're just delaying your dependence on China. And I think in some ways that's absolutely true, because for instance, just this weekend we had a lightning strike in the just outside our home, and it fried our modem as well as our telephone. Now, a telephone, if you want to live with a telephone, you're going to have to do business with China, because that's where telephones come from this day and age. And so, in a lot of ways, I think that it was lucky timing that our kids were little and they couldn't holler bloody murder, for us cutting them off from most of the toys sold in the United States, because we learned in just, very real terms how closely tied we are to the Chinese economy.
Yeah. Remind us again how this all started for you. It was a day around Christmas time.
It was 2 days after Christmas at the end of 2004, and we were just sitting around in our living room, which was absolutely, debris field of toys and gadgets and all kinds of gifts. And I was sitting around just kind of looking at it, and I realized that most of it was made in China. And then as I looked around our house, I thought, well, same thing there. Most of it's from China. And so it was just sort of an impromptu decision. I just popped into my head that it would be interesting to see as a family if we could go a whole year without buying anything made in China, to see if it could be done, first of all, and what would happen, how that would impact our lives. So on January 1st, 2005, we started off our year. And the book goes through the whole thing, from beginning to end. And we had some stumbles. My husband, it's not just a listing of what we could and couldn't buy and how we coped with that, either by, for instance, from the mousetrap. I built a couple of versions of a humane mousetrap because the only ones on the market were made in China. And there are lots of anecdotes that show how we coped with things. But it's also a running adventure, family adventure story that talks about how this experiment impacted the relationships within our family. My husband was known almost from the beginning as the weakest link, because I knew that he was going to say, this is a bunch of nonsense, and he was going to be trying to sneak Chinese merchandise into the house behind my back. And in fact, I catch him red-handed about 3 months in doing just that. And it's about how, I think the impact on the family reflects just how closely tied we are, and how trying to do something like this just upends your life, from beginning to end.
You realize your husband was not the weakest link, that he might have been the strongest link, huh?
That's right. There were, some things happened along the way that, we weren't expecting, and one of them has to do, without giving too much away, with a personal metamorphosis of my husband, and how this started out really as a family relationship. New Year's resolution, and really as a dare, but along the way it became surprisingly and unexpectedly meaningful to us in ways that we couldn't predict. So that's also woven into the story as well.
What was the hardest part of this experiment for you?
In terms of items, you mean to?
Yeah.
Well, toys, I think people are probably know from looking, if you have children or grandchildren, almost all toys are made in China, and that was certainly difficult. We searched and scoured racks and shelves and found the really small handful. We probably came pretty close to finding almost every one of the small handful of ordinary toys that are not made in China. And getting through the year, I learned a lot about saying no and kind of postponing the children's gratification, because so much of what children play with comes from China, and any kind of decorations for absolutely any holiday.
Yeah, like the 4th of July.
Yeah, that was really funny. That was a lot of fun and quite ironic when you looked at some of the things that the decorations said. Those are almost all from China. And then just really decorations of the holidays, but just in general, if you are in a craft store, some kind of decoration store, you'll just look and see that it's all from China. And it sort of, for me, it inspired some sort of fun ruminating about, when you look at Halloween masks, for example, you wonder, what do people in China, in these factories painting these masks and making these things, what do they imagine we are doing with these things on the other side of the world?
Yeah, your son also, wasn't it a pumpkin?
It was.
Your son just absolutely was in love with some kind of pumpkin toy thing, and it was made in China.
It was. And that was one of the kind of big moments in the book, was our son was really pretty laid back in comparative terms throughout the year. But then 10 months in, during a trip to Target, he spotted this $5 electric Halloween pumpkin, and just his heart went out to it. And how we resolved that, and a lot of the book reflects, it's a real experience, but I think it's also a metaphor for the complex choices, moral choices that you have to make or that you do make as a consumer every day when you consider things like globalization and so forth. And for me, it came down to a very specific, it's like, how am I going to try to stick with this resolution while at the same time I'm looking into these tear-filled eyes of this four-year-old boy who doesn't know what China is, doesn't know what a boycott is, and can't understand why, he's once again being told no. And so how we resolve that is a big part of the story. And what I found was we just couldn't get it through the year without bending some rules, although there's just a handful, really, of items that, from mistakes that we made that made their way into the house.
Yeah, you didn't extend the boycott to family members giving gifts. So mom
exactly.
And
exactly. My mom is one of the I guess antagonists. we always told people from the beginning, look, this is what we're doing. We're not telling you what you can and can't buy. But so gifts, there a lot of people tried to comply with our rule and avoid China on their own, I guess, as a courtesy, and they didn't want to be known as the one, that would bring the Chinese merchandise into our house. My mother was absolutely not one of those people, and she was she made it clear that no one was going to tell her what she could or could not buy her grandchildren. So she mocks me, sort of. That's another running theme through the book, and we had a lot of fun with that. At one point, she gave our son a sleeping bag, which was made in China, and she changed the box with a black marker pen so that it read "Made in Chile." So we had a lot of fun with her, and again, that's a lot of how this story is told. It's through the relationships and through the people that my family, my husband and son and mother in particular, are really, they're like a cast of characters, and they provided some great material from beginning to end.
We are talking with Sarah Bongiorni. She is author of A Year Without Made in China, One Family's True Life Adventure in the Global Economy. And we welcome your questions for her about her experience trying to keep things made in China out of their lives, the family's lives. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Is this something that you would attempt or maybe have attempted? Is it possible? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 23 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, July the 2nd. Coming up, it's At Issue with Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. Coming up after 5 o'clock, Ben will talk to the author of Who Killed Healthcare. That's coming up after 5 o'clock. We are talking with Sarah Bongiorni, author of A Year Without Made in China, One Family's True Life Adventure in the Global Economy. The book details her experience trying to survive a year without buying anything made in China. You might be considering that right now with all of the recent news with problems with products like pet food and tires and toys, and now fish. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm wondering, Sarah, if what's going through your mind right now with all of the news that we're hearing about with problems with these products made in China?
Well, it's been really an eye-opener because, obviously, we navigated our year by reading labels, and that's really the only way you can the information on those labels is all you have available to you to tell you where something's from. And it has been just amazing to me to read the quantity of food products that come from China, and that there is no indication and no way as a ordinary consumer that you would know that. One of the things I just read in the last couple of days is that most of the freeze-dried strawberries in food products in the United States come from China, and one of my kids eats the cereal with those strawberries in it every day. So that, and there's nothing on the box that would indicate that those come from China. So that's really been an eye-opener, and I know for a fact, from having read so many labels, that information is just not out there to ordinary consumers, and you have to, we are all placed in the position of having to count on these sort of high-level protection systems being in place to make sure that, food products are checked adequately, and it's you know, we've really all been learning all at once that those protections are not necessarily in place for us.
Yeah. You did, in your book, mention one time you were sucking on a Christmas candy cane that your husband brought back from the drugstore or whatever, and you thought, this has to be something that was made here or somewhere other than China.
Right.
But it was made in China. There wasn't a label on that one.
There was, yeah. And I think, like I said, he was called the weakest link, and here it was. It was December, Christmas candies, and he had forgotten to look, and I think it's because it never would have dawned on him that Christmas candies would come from China, but in fact we found a number of items, not a lot, because they were, you know, these things, as we're finding out, are generally components or ingredients of other kinds of foods, and they're just not labeled, but we found chocolates and some canned foods and the candies. I think as far as food items that were labeled from China, it was just a small handful of things.
Yeah, let's take some calls. John in Hartford is with us. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi there. Well, this is several years ago, but I was up in Hayward, and I stopped at an Indian store, you know, things that sell Indian artifacts.
Uh-huh.
I was just looking through, and then I was always interested in Indian beadwork, and I was looking at the beadwork, and I said, called the Indian that was in charge of the store. I said, you know, I'm not an authority on Indian design, but I said I'm pretty familiar with Indian designs, and I said, this is the strangest design. What Indian tribe is that from? And she turns it over, and she said, would you believe Hong Kong?
Oh, no.
She said, yeah, the Indians are, the reason is that she said that very few of the Indians can make the stuff anymore, and very few of them even want to.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right, does it, Sarah?
Well, you know, it's funny when you go to the store for Christmas decorations, for instance, you'll see that that's all, essentially all from China, and things like these traditional German and Polish decorations are, of course, from China these days, and they're much less expensive than the real thing. But you know, it's you look closely, and you will see those words again and again.
Yeah, it reminds me of one story, and I don't want to give away too much of every detail of your experience, but your son was looking forward to the day when he could buy stuff from King Kong, wasn't he?
That's right. I think, you know, it's funny with children. They are always listening and watching what you do. And he must have been listening into these conversations that my husband and I had over, well, where does Hong Kong fit in this equation? And is that legitimate? Can we buy from Hong Kong? Since it doesn't, you know, then we were looking at the relationship between mainland China and Hong Kong and so forth. So, yes, he does. He things from China took on an exotic appeal for him. I mean, for most of us, we don't consider Chinese items real exotic, but having been denied for a whole year, they started to look pretty tempting to him.
Yeah. Thanks, John, for the call. Dawn in Wauwatosa is with us now. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
With our rising gas prices, it appears that we have a petroleum shortage, and it makes no economic sense for me to see things shipped so far away, especially food products. And it's my understanding that all of the recyclables that we have that our municipalities pay to get rid of are shipped to China and then made into kitschy this and that and then shipped back. And with the cost of energy, why are we doing something like that? I mean, apple juice comes from China, fish comes from China, toothpaste comes from China. Why? It just doesn't make sense.
Well, I think the economics of it, that's an area beyond my expertise, but when you think about it, it is mind-boggling. These candy canes that Joy mentioned just a couple minutes ago, I think they were something like, you know, 70 cents for 20, or just incredibly cheap cost. And the idea that it was worth someone's while to make this low-cost item with the package and the labeling and everything over in China and then ship it all the way back here, you know, it just really does blow your mind that those are just pure financial decisions. And you're right about the shipping and the cost of in terms of energy consumption and so forth. But it blows your mind to think that those are decisions that people are making, that it's still financially worth their while, apparently, to ship things all the way from across the world.
Yeah. And I guess you found out that buying things not made in China. For instance, the tennis shoes for your children cost a whole lot more if they weren't made in China.
Right. Well, that's one of the, you know, there's a lot of my personal ambivalence, which is a genuine feeling of the towards globalization and the fact that there really are real costs as well as benefits to our interdependence on other countries, including China. I think, you know, we're all familiar with the concerns with regard to American job losses and all kinds of you know, sort of labor and environmental issues that are a big focus for a lot of people. However, I learned in a very personal way that there's a real cost to trying to avoid products from China, and the tennis shoes are, I think those were the first real item that we ran into a roadblock. My son, 4-year-old son, needed new tennis shoes, so my challenge was to find tennis shoes from someplace other than China, and it took me weeks of scouring the mall and making calls across the country and so forth, and I ended up buying tennis shoes made in Italy that cost almost $70 with shipping and so forth. And and I bought him two sizes too big because I thought that was a ridiculous amount of money, and he wore them the entire year till they were essentially in shreds at the end of the year. But if you can stroll into someplace like Payless Shoes and buy perfectly good tennis shoes for your child for $15, then that's a real benefit to you as a consumer, especially someone, say, a single parent with several children. So it's really, again, I think there are a lot of complex issues and trade-offs that I found that even our family doing this experiment, which was a lot of fun and a real eye-opener, but we faced a lot of more complex choices just trying to get through our year. So when you extend that out to the larger world, things get even more complicated.
You get an email from Richard in La Crosse who wonders if you or your family ever challenged clerks or store buyers or people at the stores about your desire to buy not made in China products.
Well, that comes up a couple of times, and I think it's, again, early in the book when I made some kind of innocuous comment about not being able to really consider some earrings or other jewelry that was on sale at a little shop, and I drew kind of some ironic comment from the shop owner, and I decided I'm not going to touch that. I'm not going to pursue this, you know, but I realized that one thing that comes through a couple of times in the book is how uncomfortable some retailers and so forth feel about the fact that they are selling things from China. And I think that reflects sort of a general unease that a lot of people feel because on the one hand, we know we're getting access to low-cost goods and very often good quality goods. On the other hand, we all know that there's a trade-off in importing items from China and elsewhere. And so I really picked up on a lot of unease among people for various reasons. And I think the larger context for that is that I think in general we like to think of ourselves as self-reliant, but what I found through our experience is that we are so dependent on other places for really ordinary items, and that if you want to try to avoid that, it's really going to upend your life, and you will not be able to have anything approximating a, you know, quote-unquote ordinary consumer life without Chinese goods.
Yeah. He goes on in his email to say, I've been looking for low-energy or, you know, high-efficiency fluorescent light bulbs that are not made in China, but he hasn't had any luck yet. Have you done that?
Well, we found, I don't know if we looked for those light bulbs specifically, but, you know, when you look at these things enough, you start to see patterns. And one of the couple of the places that, at least in 2005, I mean, who knows, the world changed quickly, so I don't know if it's still the case, but we found lots of light bulbs from Mexico and Poland.
Ah.
So, you know, you start to see patterns. I know lots of Band-Aids from Brazil, you know, and lots of children's stickers from Canada.
And
you start
wonder
to see these things. And I mean, those are the kinds of things that I came across just from really being obsessed with these labels during our year.
Yeah. Besides toys, didn't you have a really hard time fixing just needed a gadget to fix a drawer, and you could not find that gadget not made in China?
That's right. Mm. Things would break around the house, and then you'd go to try to repair them, and then the replacement parts or whatever you needed to repair something was made in China, so those things would lay around broken. We had the kitchen drawer was stuck shut, and in fact, that was another case of my husband, who is known as the weakest link. He snuck behind my back and bought the replacement part, which came from China, subsequently lost it and then confessed that he had snuck it in. So I said, well, or it was either him or maybe it was me. We said, look, now you fessed up to the fact that you were breaking the rules, so now you're not going to be able to repair it because you've just admitted that the part came from China. So so that stayed stuck, closed all year. We also, our coffee maker broke, and if you go to a normal, you know, big box store where most people buy their small appliances, all coffee makers, you know, in the $30-$35 range, they'll all come from China. So we ended up boiling our water and pouring our coffee into filters over mugs all year because we were we didn't have an option of a non-Chinese coffee maker. And what you will realize, and what we realized in going through this year, is that China really owns the market on a lot of ordinary goods. And so you simply, your option is either buy something made in China or just don't buy it. And those are including some very basic items that I think most people probably would not consider optional. For example, a telephone.
Yeah, and well, it might be optional. You mentioned it a little earlier in the program. I was surprised to read that the have a heart or the humane animal traps, like the mouse trap, if you want to have one that doesn't actually kill the mouse, you have to buy, those are made in China. The humane ones are made in China.
That's right. Yeah. That's another example of one of the complex moral choices that we faced, because we always use those little catch and release traps. Well, those those are all made in China. So I ended up building, I guess that's kind of I want to use air quotes around the word building, because I put together a couple of contraptions where our mice invaded our home about midway through the year. And I really didn't want to use the snapping traps. If I could catch and release the mice, that's what, you know, we always had done, and that's what we wanted to do. So I rigged together a couple of homemade contraptions to try to catch the mouse without killing it. And that was, you know, as a result of being locked out of the humane mousetrap market.
Our next caller is Clark in West Bend. Hi, Clark, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
This whole idea of the idea of buying from foreign countries really brings to mind two acquaintances of mine that I thought had really unusual historical effects on this. The one is a neighbor of mine whose husband was a union representative, and this is like in the 1980s, and they absolutely refused to buy anything that wasn't made in America, and they had a hard time even back in the 80s doing this, but that was a real strong proponent of their thought. They would not buy anything that wasn't made in America, and yet in reflection to that, there was a friend of mine who was a bit of a rebel. He eventually moved to Canada and gave up his U.S. citizenship back in the 1970s, who was very anti-American and refused to buy anything that was made in America. He was buying everything foreign that he could, in his mind, thinking that this will eventually bankrupt the U.S. economy, and that was his attitude. So this is something that's not just today. This goes way back for a lot of people.
Well, it's interesting because we, in comparative terms, we set the bar low because we weren't trying to buy things made in the USA. We were only trying to avoid the label or the tag made in China, which seems like, okay, well, that seems pretty straightforward. And what was, I guess, revealing is the fact that just trying to avoid made in China was so difficult without even, you know, the idea of trying to buy only American products. I mean, you'd be really locked out at this point of most ordinary consumer goods and electronics in particular. It's almost all from China, and there is at least a couple of years ago. I haven't checked recently if they still exist, but there is a very high end maker of televisions in the United States, and they're very expensive televisions. So I don't know if they'd be an option for most ordinary people, but there are a handful of places that make certain things that come overwhelmingly otherwise from China. And one of the things that I guess I realized was that if you spend enough money, or if you're willing to forego some very ordinary items, you can avoid Chinese goods. But I think for most people, it's just really not an option. And, you know, electronics and appliances and toys being the most obvious examples.
Yeah, and any thoughts on just the effectiveness of boycotts like yours? I know yours was just a one-family experience, but is this a way to try to change the world by everybody doing this? Do you think that would work?
Well, you know, the thing is there's a real, I think we touched on this earlier, there's a real cost in dollars of avoiding Chinese goods. And so I think for a lot of ordinary people, it would be very difficult. But what one thing I do think is interesting, and like I said, ours was not about beating up on China. It wasn't a political experiment, really, in any way. It was just to see if it could be done and what would happen. But one thing that I think is very interesting is that people today do not use their power of consumers in the way they maybe did or might have considered in the past. I mean, people don't launch protests against China, even though we might have concerns about human rights or just other issues. Maybe people who are worried about the treatment of Tibet say, but we as consumers don't like say, you know, we're putting our foot down. We're going to have a 1 week embargo here or something. And it's just really interesting to me. And I'm not suggesting that they do, but it's very interesting to me to see that people don't really in any kind of organized way that I don't seem to come across that. And I don't know if that's just a reflection, a change in the nature of the public's attitude toward things, or if there is just an acceptance that we really are so tied to the global economy and that maybe that's not something that's practical. But that is something that has occurred to me just in being so aware of these issues.
Right. Well, let's ask, do you accept that so much of what we buy in this country is made in China? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We are talking with a guest who decided to try to go a year without buying anything made in China. Not as some sort of political statement, but just to see if it could be done. And it was very difficult. We are talking with her about her experience and welcoming your thoughts and questions. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Sarah Bongiorni is author of A Year Without, Made in China, One Family's True Life Adventure in the Global Economy. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock, and it's all things political with Kathleen Dunn and her political analyst after 9 o'clock. Our next caller is Mary in Winona, Minnesota. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I was fortunate enough several years ago to have two different sets of young teachers from China living in my home. One of them taught at Winona State University, and the other two actually attended classes at Winona State University. And these were young people with not a lot of money. And when it came time for them to go back to China, they were looking for gifts to take back. And it was virtually impossible for them to find things to take home to China that were not originally made in China.
Oh, is that ironic, huh? Yeah.
And so we ended up, because they were shopping, you know, fairly low-end kinds of things, buying things, and then we would bring them home and we would soak the made in China label.
They would have fit right in our family.
But they, my discovery was that of the huge variety of products that we have here in the United States, these were things that they just simply had never seen before. So the things you talked about, what the people painting the Halloween mask
right.
must think about what we do with this stuff, it's all of it. I mean, everything that is produced there is produced for the Western market, and they just don't see the products. They had no clue that some of these things existed because they never get into stores in China.
That's right. They have a lot of these manufacturing zones in China that is, like as you said, specifically for the export market. So these things are not available in China at all. And maybe there's lack of even interest in them, but they go directly over here to us. When you were describing the search for a gift from the States, from someplace other than China, my husband during our year was working for about a month or so abroad in France and looking for some little trinkets to bring home to our children. And same thing there, even looking for Eiffel Towers. And guess what? They're made in China there, too. So I guess that's sort of an international experience at this point.
You also mentioned in the book, I thought it was funny, that a lot of your gift giving with your husband, and he to you was a little less romantic than it used to be.
Oh, yeah. You know, this is the man who once brought me, you know, lingerie from Italy and, you know, scarves from France. And then I got office supplies from Canada for Christmas. So let me say that there was some real cost to our boycott in some very funny and unexpected ways. So we had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, and you got him pants from Cambodia.
Pants from Cambodia.
Yeah, romantic.
Exactly right. That nothing says I love you like pants from Cambodia.
Maybe better than an office chair, though. But you did need the office chair.
I did need the office chair, but sometimes sometimes what you need is not necessarily what you want.
I know.
Which is what I learned.
Now, was that chair one where he said it wasn't it was okay to buy because it didn't say it was made from anywhere?
Yeah. That was our exactly. That's where we had the discussion. You know, we kind of there's a lot of the debates with my husband over various topics throughout the book, and that's what he was saying. Where we got into our discussion of logic and so forth and the scientific theory and so forth, because he said, look, it doesn't say it's from China, so it doesn't say it's from China. You can't prove it's not. It is from China. And we, you know, kind of go into a debate from there. But that sort of thing runs throughout the book and hopefully makes it a lot of fun for people.
Yeah, it is. And you were on some kind of toy shopping spree, and you thought you found the perfect toy that was made in Canada because it had a little maple leaf and it was on some Canada,
made in
Canada type of a website, but...
That's right. Well, when I called them up, I made a Monday morning phone call to this Canadian company's headquarters in Ottawa, and they had really played up that maple leaf and these Canadian origins on their website, so I thought, fantastic. It's this little ride-on car called, I think it's called a plasma car, and just fantastic-looking toy, and just calling to make a quick call to verify that, in fact, it was made in Canada. And the woman on the other end was very surprised and quickly corrected me and told me that they were made in China. So I was out of luck there once again.
Yeah, I got an email from Dion in Neillsville. I thought you might be interested to know that we have an almost 38-year-old son who lives in New Mexico and who has refused to buy or use anything made in China for at least 20 years.
Amazing.
Yeah, he doesn't like the way the workers are treated over there. It has made us much more aware of the many things that are made in China. Mm-hmm. And we have found that when you start looking, almost everything is.
That's right.
It does make shopping for Christmas or birthday gifts most difficult. So, do you think it is possible for 20 years to never buy anything or use anything made in China?
I found that, you know, really ordinary things like, I mean, telephones, you know, that's all from China as far as I can see. You would be giving up not just the kind of frivolous extra items, but really basic stuff. Even things like, we talked about the parts to repair things, but also increasingly things like when you go to Home Depot and you think tools and, you know, maybe piping that's to repair something that's gone wrong in your house. So much of that comes from China too, and often you really don't have another option. So, it's pretty overwhelming at this point.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's trying.
Phil
in Manitouish Waters. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing this morning?
Good, how are you?
Good. We had a shared experience with you. Might be related to the Fair Trade, Most Favored Trade in Nations Act or something they had a lot of years ago. I was drilling a well down in Illinois, and our rig was downwind of a plant that just put out some horrid smoke when we were downwind from it, and then it shifted, and we kind of lost interest. A few years later, I was back in the same area, ran into a fellow worker, and I said, what on earth do they make there? And he said, well, they take used or leftover seed corn and seed beans and make them into animal feeds. And I said, well, how on earth can they do that? I said, it's got mercury and pesticides on it, herbicides. He said, well, they can't sell here in America legally. But since Japan at that time had more favored trading nation status, we could package that stuff, send it to Japan, they repackage it, send it back here, and they can sell it. Kind of curious, isn't it?
Well, it is. And they could sell it because different laws applied to the Japanese imports than they did to U.S.-made products?
That's right.
Yeah. I know you're not necessarily an expert on all the laws of this, Sarah, but some general thoughts on whether it is easier to sell things made in China here than it is U.S. things?
Well, I think what's interesting is that we are so... unaware as consumers of how these larger trading systems impact us. I mean, we were relying on the labeling system, but there are all these rules in place that don't necessarily work perfectly. The system is far from neat, and as we've seen with these recent recalls of so many different things, we rely on those things to protect us and don't have any a practical way of tracking for ourselves what is coming our way. So that's really been an eye-opener for, I know, all kinds of people. And we were looking at, you know, the micro level of these items, ordinary items, as a way to understand these things. But you can see how vast the system is and how no one, you know, governments included, really has a handle on that the movement of so many products. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of the things that we get from overseas are of real benefit to us, you know, good quality and low cost. But we certainly see that we have, there's a heightened sense of vulnerability, and it's not just a philosophical sense of vulnerability, but there is a real personal, you know, in terms of our health and safety, I think we're really learning how vulnerable that is as those things are also to these huge, rapidly moving trading systems.
Wanda in Middleton is with us. Hi, Wanda.
Hi, thank you. On the idea of our health and safety, in the Progressive magazine some months ago, there was an article that says items are scrap metal is produced in this country that's radioactive and then shipped over to China. And then China uses it in any way they want to make things that are sent over here. So either the author or the person being interviewed said they always check it out with a Geiger counter. I don't know where you even get one of those, but check it out with a Geiger counter to see if it clicks and if it's still radioactive.
Well, that's interesting. I think that we're going to see some big changes here with regard to new. This is just my own personal view, but I suspect that with a heightened public awareness of just how many holes there are in these systems, I suspect we're going to see some big changes, probably in China as well as here, because people's you know, basic safety is at issue, and it'll be very interesting to see going forward how everything from those little labels that were our maps in our experiment to these high-level protective systems as items come into the country. I suspect we're going to see lots of changes over the coming months and years.
Yeah, Senator Charles Schumer of New York did yesterday call for the creation of a new federal position, a federal import czar, blaming problems with the safety and quality of Chinese imports on bureaucracy and saying neither the Chinese nor American government is doing their job in this. So there's one possible public policy change based on the recent news.
Right.
Nick in McHenry, Illinois. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joyce. This is Nick. I enjoy your program every day. I listen to it. I just have a few comments. And I think the problem with China is a bigger problem for the Western countries. I think that we are sort of delivering ourselves and will be delivering ourselves to China in the long term. We have a lot of things that are produced in China. We have transferred a lot of our jobs to China. And long term, I believe this is going to become a bigger problem for the Western countries when you look at it at that level, you think oil has gone up, the price of oil has gone up, the price of steel has gone up, the price of materials in general has gone up. And the dependency of the Western countries, especially the United States, has increased, will increase down the road. This is going to be, on that level, looked at as the superpower of the world. I think the countries are not going to gain leadership and momentum in the world through wars anymore. Information technology and economic power will, and I think China is on the right track to be the economic power of the world. And this is in my opinion bad news for us in America. On the on the micro level, I think it's the purchase of the goods from China is associated with greed. We have a lot of business owners in our country, and I would say in the Western countries in general, that are doing that and transferring jobs to China and purchasing products from China at a fraction of the cost because of greed. They want to make a quick bucks. They're looking at the short-term impact for themselves and probably their shareholders without having an outlook.
Right. Nick, I'm sorry. You have a lot of very interesting things to say, but we're running short on time, and I'm not sure, again, Sarah, that these are areas that you consider yourself an expert in, but you want to comment?
Well, just that, I mean, I think the call is correct that there are some real trade-offs that are being made out there. At the same time, you know, one of the things that I learned, and I go back to the example of the shoes, is we were able to, it certainly wasn't in our normal budget, but we ended up spending almost $70 for these tennis shoes for a four-year-old boy. You know, I think if you're a person of modest means and you can buy perfectly good tennis shoes for $15 and those come from China, you know, I'm not going to condemn a person for making a decision that makes sense to them and is a real benefit to them and their family.
Yeah, we have an email from Bill in Madison wondering if you have heard of or had experiences with folks who, thinking they have bought an American car, found out that it wasn't an American car after all because American cars have all Chinese parts or a lot of Chinese parts.
Well, that's one of the things that I address early on in the book, is that we set out the goal that we set out for ourselves was to avoid the words made in China. And if we knew that there was a component that was from China, we would avoid that too. But that's what's so complicated, is component parts. And, you know, now we know about food ingredients, but components from China are just everywhere, and I don't know that there is any practical way to even know where the components of any given product come from, because they can be from multiple sources, multiple countries, and I guess that's, again, another indication of just how deep we are in the global economy and the difficulty of trying to back away from that on a practical basis.
Sharon and Shatek, hi, you're on the air.
I think you just were talking about what I was wondering. I heard a program the other night in the middle of the night on public radio, and they were talking about U.S. companies going overseas, like to China, and manufacturing things there and then selling them back here at a high price while exploiting the labor in the manufacturing country. And which is one of the reasons they said is why we are thought so poorly of in the world today, is because we exploit so much.
Yeah, we only have a minute to go, Sarah. Do you have a final thought on this?
Well, again, it's reflective of the really complex issues out there, and there are no neat, simple answers, because if you want to say, well, I'm not, you know, I don't like the way the labor rights or human rights record is in one country, you look at the labor, the human rights records of other low-cost countries that we depend on, and it's not necessarily going to be a lot better. So it is very complicated. There are no easy answers that I've found anyway when it comes to these issues.
Yeah. I don't want to give away the ending of your book, but let's put it this way. You're still thinking very carefully when you make these purchases,
that's
right?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. We kind of found a middle ground. We found a way to live in a way that we could, and that we kind of made our peace with the state of the world. But needless to say, it continues to be very meaningful for us, and we have not put aside our label reading, that's for sure.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Sarah Bongiorni is author of A Year Without, Made in China. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.